Are you a grad student, postdoc, or alumni that would like to be interviewed? Visit queensu.ca/sgs/grad-chat to fill out the interviewee form. You can listen to Grad Chat every Tuesday at 4 to 4:30 p.m.
Is all inclusive. I only play music that I love and think that you'll love too. So tune in every Tuesday morning from 10 a.m. to noon right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. in Atlantic and 7:30 in Newfoundland.
You are listening to the only destination for local music, sports, and news, CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
In partnership with the Union Gallery is the Twofold Artist in Residence program led by co-directors Jill Glatt and Berlin Reed. This program provides an opportunity for local BIPOC artists to dive into their practices, collaborations, and discussions while having access to designated workspaces, professional development and mentorship, communal events, and a studio visit platform. This year's artists in residence are Shanique Pert, Alicia Udvari, Shamara Pert, and Samara Khan, who worked at the Union Gallery in July and now Modern Fuel Art Gallery in August. To learn more, you can visit uniongallery.queensu.ca. This and every summer Tuesday, you can head down to Springer Market Square for Salsa in the Square. From 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., enjoy a free beginner class, then hit the open dance floor until 10 p.m. Also, every Wednesday summer evening, enjoy Swingin' Summer, a live music throwback to the era of romantic, joyful, and jazzy songs from 7 to 8 p.m. at Springer Market Square. And every summer Friday evening, Springer Market Square hosts Kickin' It Country from 7 to 8 p.m., featuring live local country music. For more information on these events, visit downtownkingston.ca. Every Monday at Daft Brewing, Bon Evans hosts Music Trivia Mondays at 7 p.m. Put your music knowledge to the test in four more rounds of trivia, whether you're going it solo or in a team, with clips, questions, and more. The winning team walks away at the end of the night with a $50 gift card and bragging rights, so be sure to check it out for a Monday night of music and fun. Kingston welcomes back Movies in the Square and Springer Market Square on Thursday evenings this summer, and the full lineup has now been announced. This week, August 15th, Freaky Friday starts at dusk. You can also catch Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian on August 22nd, and Lilo and Stitch on August 29th. Be sure to mark your calendars now and bring your blankets, chairs, and bug spray to experience your favorite films for free this summer under the stars. Coming up at Kingston's Independent Cinema, The Screening Room, you can catch special screenings of 1940's Rebecca on August 17th, 18th, 20th, and 22nd as part of the Summer Alfred Hitchcock Presents series. As well, 2016's The Love Witch will be playing on August 11th, and 1977's Three Women on August 18th as part of the Summer Movie Night screenings by the Cinema Society of Kingston. As well, you can catch 1974's Phantom of Paradise in its 50th anniversary screenings on August 17th, 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Also coming up at the screening room is Cat Video Fest from August 17th to 22nd, a fundraiser where 10% of all ticket sales will be donated to Kingston Animal Rescue, featuring compilations of the latest and best cat videos of the internet on the big screen. Their 2024 classic movie poll for audience suggestions is also now open at their website, and there are also new arrivals and special screenings all the time, so be sure to check back at screeningroomkingston.com for all of your cinema adventures. This year's Kick and Push Festival, now in its 10th year as an interactive local theater festival, launched on July 25th and runs until August 18th across Kingston. Kick and Push specializes in one-of-a-kind, unexpected, and immersive shows that take the audience beyond passive observers, ranging from venues like the Grand Theater to the Tet Center to the more unexpected. Here's Leslie, Ramsey, and Matt from the Kick and Push show What Brings You In with more on their production. Hi folks, we are here with the team behind What Brings You In, an interactive, deep listening performance rounding out this year's Kick and Push Festival in Kingston. Here with us, we have artist and conceptualizer Leslie Ting, software engineer and creative technologist Ramsey Nasser, and audio and broadcast engineer Matt Rideout. Welcome in, everybody.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi folks, it's really great to have so many folks involved with this show in for the interview and be able to talk about all the different kind of angles that folks might be able to look forward to during your run in Kingston this weekend. But I thought to start, would each of you mind introducing yourself a little bit more and perhaps telling us a bit about your background to your comfort?
My name is Leslie Ting. I am the violinist and audio host of the show, and I conceived it.
I'm Ramsey Nasser. I'm the software developer on the project. I have a background in computer science and design technology. I've been working in and around the video game and interactive technology field for about 15 years now. And I'm a part of the Emma Technology Cooperative, which is a worker-owned cooperative in New York City, building things like What Brings You In and other experiences.
Hi, I'm Matt Rideout. I am the audio and broadcast engineer for the show. I'm an audio engineer by training. I also, for the last 4 or 5 years, have been doing live stream and internet broadcast work. That about covers my role. We'll get into how that all interacts with the specifics of what brings you in and why it's an interesting technological challenge for all of us, which has been really fun and engaging.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, that's what's so exciting about it. I just wanted to give folks a little bit of an idea of what those roles kind of entail, and you did a wonderful job of that. So thank you. And before we dig a little bit deeper into the content of the production specifically, I wanted to ask you folks, how did you three come together on this project initially?
So I had started working on this show in 2019, so pre-pandemic. So I was thinking about it as a theatrical sound installation, and I was really in person in venue. And then the pandemic happened, and I got interested in what an online version of the show would feel like, could feel like, without defaulting to a video stream of the thing we were going to do in person, which wasn't fully fleshed out, honestly, in that moment anyway. So what happened was some really foundational development happened while we were also exploring questions around translating live performance and all the feelings and why we go to a live performance and are in a room together, why we like that experience and go for that experience, and how to translate those feelings online. So how do we feel other people experiencing the thing at the same time as you? How do you still feel connection? How do you feel... and then also, I have an interest in creative accessibility, specifically with the blind and low vision community. So also, what if you are a blind person? Then how do all those things translate, and how do we find creative ways to connect us when we're, it's a much different feeling when you are experiencing a show basically at home alone through a screen and headphones. So we looked for a software engineer, and in particular, we wanted someone who was an artist also. So that's how we found and, you know, connected with Ramsey, and maybe I'll let Ramsey. Oh, and then with Matt Rideout. So how did that work? So we were working on translating the sound and music online. So I didn't want to just record it in stereo. I was really interested in translating the acoustics also, and the ideas I had around concept and acoustics and how that would change and translate concepts around experiences I had in therapy and duality and listening and connecting. And so our sound designer, Matt Smith, had experience in ambisonic microphones, which gave us the ability to play with space and direction and being in the middle of the sound, which is different than the, you know, being in the audience in the room. But it allowed us just a different way to play with sound. And so we were connected to Matt through the Riser program with Why Not Theater. And then ever since then, I've handcuffed myself to that right out as our broadcast and audio engineer, because he has this incredible ability to, you know, what now, like several, 3 years later, it's gone way beyond just demo recording with a small ambisonic microphone into live mixing in the room to 7.1 speakers and online binaurally. So,
do you think there's a particular way that your collaboration as a team, whether that's between the three of you, your broader team, has really kind of evolved or found its stride across your diverse disciplines?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ramsey and Matt might have things to say about this also for sure, but I would say one really interesting challenge has been around vocabulary and language, because there are so many disciplines at play here.
Yeah.
So, you know, now on the team, we have an environmental designer, a sound designer, a broadcast engineer, you know, Ramsey, a software engineer, experience designer, two musicians. So it's really straddled, you know, theater, new music, concert, new media. And so I would say there have been, I wish that we, you know, someone will say a sentence and often I'm like, oh, I have no idea what you're saying, you know, but it's been quite, I really like that. I really like being at the edge of my learning. And so it's been interesting to, you know, meet each other halfway, but maybe Ramsey and Matt have other things to add to that.
Yeah, I feel like it almost mirrors the the piece itself, which is sort of sits in this tension between being in person together and being sort of separated but connected by technology. And when I've done, the ideal way to conceptualize an interactive experience is to be in the space together, and we'll have like a whiteboard or a big pad of paper and markers, and we could like draw and like just even just by reading each other's body languages, like understand what you might mean by the words that you're using. But instead, we're relegated to WhatsApp and email and Google Docs, and we have to kind of make do with that. And we did, and there was work, and we were able to do that. And I do feel that in a sort of strange way mirrors again the piece itself, where ideally we'd all be in a room together just watching Leslie play, but like that's difficult for a variety of reasons. So we can sort of harness technology to sort of get around that, and it's different, but it's still beautiful and compelling.
Yeah, I think specifically like being from, I think Ramsey and I have kind of the two deepest tech roles, and they're in like kind of different worlds, but we also like literally have to talk to each other, but also our systems have to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And so there's been like, I think Ramsey's been really great to work with, and I think we haven't had a lot of like trouble communicating. It's been pretty smooth, and like we won't have time, and I'm sure your listeners don't care to get into the weeds of this stuff, but there's been a couple moments of problem solving of like problems that we were fighting with for 2-3 years that I'll specifically take my hat off to Ramsey of. The first time I've seen a QR code in a way that didn't make me roll my eyes. That's an inside joke, but solving things about internet delay and servers and stuff and broadcasts going out and things being synced up on the website in ways that just feel smooth and correct for the audience now, that are deeply impressive to me and have been a real delight to like see come together and make happen.
So I wanted to pivot a little bit here, Leslie, with a couple questions for you. And I was wondering, was there a particular spark or motive or moment behind this project that kind of originated What Brings You In?
It was kind of a slow, I would say like something that had kind of been missing for me for a while as a more, like someone who had been freelancing, working in a more classical, traditional sense. I'd had an orchestral job and I was doing like chamber music and, kind of the usual freelance gigs. And I was missing a connection to the audience that, that I wanted more, like I wanted to get my hands in there a bit more, whereas usually like as a classical musician you're handed music and a schedule and you here's like this is what we're doing, we're playing to this movie or we're playing this show. And I really wanted to get in there and have like more agency around the connection with the audience. And I had done a previous show where I'd gotten a sense that sharing a personal story was really contextualizing classical music, which has its own life and canon and deep tradition, but contextualizing it in a personal life took the listening in a different direction. And therapy has always been a thing that I've done that for 15 years on and off, and I've always felt that kind of listening has been really intriguing to me. And I mean, contrived, it's an expensive professional stranger but also a skill in listening that I always found so interesting. And the title What Brings You In also comes from getting to ask that question myself when I had this short stint as an optometrist in a past life. And I would start my sessions, my appointments with a patient one-on-one with, so what brings you in? And that's a really common question. A version of that question comes up in therapy when you go for the first time. And for me, it was always a signal of I'm going to do a certain kind of listening right now. And it's a little bit one directional, but it was like a different level of focus and concentration for me. And I think I've been really interested in that from the stage. So the audience performer relationship and that being a kind of odd one directionality, but I'm interested in both the therapist and the audience, but I never really get to know either, because that's not how it works, quote unquote. But I so appreciate that kind of listening. Yeah, but I think also, like, we could all afford to take our listening, even if it is a more back and forth, like, mutual conversation, to take our listening to, like, that deeper level that I think, honestly, everyone is after. And just from the interviews, I interviewed 50 people on their experiences in therapy, and I think ultimately another level of listening, but also, like, vulnerability is something that, you know, I wish that I could have more of in life, and then I might not have to go to therapy so much.
Felt. Love that. Thank you for being willing to share all of that. And I'm sure doing all those interviews was also a lot of work for you. And then I just wanted to ask you also a quick question about the album, because I was forwarded that information to the album version of your project, which I believe is now available on Bandcamp. So did that album then come out of the time you were, we were all quarantined, when it was more remote, or did that come after? How did the album come out of the performance ideas, essentially what I'm asking?
Yeah, the album came out early on in the development process and sort of the first half. And we, you know, as I mentioned, the demo recording of, like, the idea of doing this recording binaurally and working with Matt Rideout sort of happened early on, and it was sort of towards the end maybe of the quarantine time, and for a couple years there we were using the binaural recording when we were just focusing on an online audience. So so we used this beautifully recorded version of all of the music of the show, instead of me and Jermaine Liu, who's the percussionist, instead of us playing live, and so we did. Yeah, so the idea of the album, which is purely just the music, I do quite a bit of talking in the show, but the actual original conception was that I wouldn't be doing all this talking. So what I like about the album is it lets me have, you know, scratch that itch of, like, that initial pure version of just the music of the show.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
That's how it came about.
So kind of two different experiences for folks who might be interested, which is really great to know, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners would also be interested in just having access to that music if they so choose. Thank you so much, Leslie. I was going to pivot over to Ramsey here for a couple of questions. I wanted to kind of open the floor to you to tell us a little bit more about any specific technologies or software that have been key in developing this project, and maybe how they interact with or enhance the performance.
Sure. So a lot of it is fairly, I guess I'd say, conventional tech you might put into a video game. So, like, really high performance graphics to stuff to draw, you know, the show. You see your own cursor, like where your finger is, but you also see the cursors of everyone else in the show. So if there are, you know, dozens of people in the show, that means your phone is actually drawing all of those, you know, dozens, potentially hundreds of other cursors. So there's, you know, tricks and buckets of math to make that fast and run smoothly. Nothing terribly, I'd say, out of the ordinary from what you'd see in an interactive piece. You know, this is clearly not a video game, but technologically they're related. The thing that Matt alluded to earlier, though, is maybe the wackiest bit of tech that, to my knowledge, is completely novel and certainly was written originally for the show. I've not seen it deployed in any other system. But it solved a specific synchronization problem that we were having, wherein the audio of the show was delayed. So, you know, high quality live streamed audio is always buffered, right? You know, 15 to 30 seconds to prevent it from stuttering because of network interruptions or network instabilities. So you'd be hearing the audio about 30 seconds after, you know, Leslie would broadcast it, or after, you know, Matt would sort of put it out. But the interactions were coming out instantaneously, because they're just these basically, you know, the show has a sort of backstage interface where it says, like, go to this mode, go to that mode, and then all the browsers sort of advance together. Those aren't buffered naturally. There's no reason to buffer them. They're just tiny little bits of data. So for a few years, we were in this space where the interactive components of the show happened early. you know, 15 to 30 seconds early. And the team is, you know, everyone is an incredible performer. So the way they dealt with that for years is by kind of performing, by compensating, by like clicking the buttons a little late, you know, just sort of, you know, playing it off. And it was as a craftsperson, as someone who wants to build like good, robust software, that just kept me up at night. I'm like, oh, this is so janky. So what we ended up doing, what Matt alluded to, and this had to integrate with Matt's systems, and you know, it ended up working out really nicely. But the whole show is actually run off of QR codes. So if you've ever scanned a QR code at a restaurant to get a menu, you usually get just a URL, right? And then your phone just goes to that URL. But you can actually put whatever you want, whatever data you want, into a QR code. So behind the scenes, we encode the full state of the show, like what interaction it should be on, what the browser should be showing, pack it up into a little QR code that no one ever sees. Matt mixes that QR code video stream and the live audio stream, and that goes out as a video stream. And then the phones basically receive a QR code that we don't show anyone. We scan it and we extract that data to drive the show forward, and we just play the audio. And that's my absolute favorite trick, not just of the show. And that's a top three favorite trick maybe of my career.
I was going to say, like, wow, what a creative fix to be able to just condense that in such a way and streamline it in such a way that even folks who are coming in, unless they've listened to this interview, in which case fun behind the scenes information for you, folks coming in might not even realize like how much of that work has already been done to keep everybody on the same page, which is perfect because I was going to ask you to kind of highlight a piece of tech or software that you really appreciated working on. And that sounds like, that sounds exactly like what I was looking for. And then during the performance, then, what are you doing? Like, what does your role look like when people are actually in the theater?
Well, I think at this point done the job of a software developer, which is to have obsoleted myself. And I don't, you know, the system more or less runs itself. I mean, you know, it doesn't run itself. The team runs it. They have an interface and they're able to sort of advance and manage the show. I actually no longer have a role. And like once the show is live, I sort of, the door is closed on the, you know, what I can do.
Interesting.
And since Premiere, we've been basically locked. So going forward, I'm you know, a relic at this point.
Well, I mean, it's great to hear that everything is going so smoothly. And then last, but of course not least, Matt, I was wondering, how do you then use sound and manipulate the sound, mixing the sound during the performance to kind of support the themes that are being explored in the piece?
It's been really interesting. I do want to add one thing to Ramsey's explanation of the QR code, because I can hear the question of somebody who paid attention to that, which is, why don't you just set a delay on the thing? It's because the delay between the website state and the audio was dynamic and individual to every single person on every single browser. It wasn't like a dead 15 seconds. It's dynamic to every single person's server and browser and blah, blah, blah. So it would change person to person, time to time, moment to moment. So that's why it's a brilliant solution.
Yeah, precisely.
We're not overcomplicating it. My role kind of during the show is I guess the opposite of what Ramsey's just said. I'm doing a million things. I'm trying to think how to like translate the technical stuff into kind of the realm of how the question was asked, which I like and is interesting to think about. First of all, as Leslie was talking about, it's a spatial audio experience. And so one of the things is creating what we call binaural audio out of stereo, which is different than, again, kind of drawing, sorry, it's different than like just a regular stereo or just stereo with reverb on it or something where it like puts it in a hall. There are lots of things using phase and relational volume and all this stuff that you can put things kind of in front of and behind, as well as left to right in over headphones. You see it in video games more and more. You see they call it 3D sound or 3D headphones, you know. And so we're doing some of that stuff. Some of that's baked into how the recordings were made. And some of the electronic tracks that are playing along with the violin are being broadcast in binaural sound to people on headphones at home while they're being broadcast in actual spatial sound and an actual surround sound system in the room simultaneously. And then there's things like our sand table, which we haven't talked about yet, which is one of my favorite pieces of tech. It is a sand table. It's a table. It's about like 2 feet by 1.5 feet kind of counter height table with about an inch of sand, just nice fine brown sand in it. And there are microphones built into the corners of this table. So when you run your finger through the sand, you hear an amplified, intense whoosh of sand. And that is spatialized in the room. So it's hopefully the experience is that as you run your finger in a circle around that table, you hear your finger running through sand around you in the room, flying around your head. And Matt Smith, our sound designer, who Leslie mentioned earlier, who's brilliant and great, has designed like some effects and some sound design around that. So there's sometimes where it's just kind of the raw amplified sound, and sometimes there's more swirl and effects and phase and stuff going on. One of the challenges for me was creating a binaural version of that for the online, because they're hearing it live online. I'm also mixing that down to the broadcast for the website. And so creating, I won't get into all the tech, but there's, yeah, creating a front to back sensation with that, as well as a left to right, and creating depth in that, as well as the live performances and creating kind of, yeah, a more three-dimensional depth to the, that's kind of the way in which Leslie's conceptual version of the show is most interacting with kind of technical decisions for me. I hope that answers the question.
It absolutely, yeah. No, I think that's a great example for folks to understand kind of the back and forth that's happening with you and the amount of work that has gone in with you and the rest of the sound team to kind of illustrate the themes that are at work. So just to start closing off a little bit, I wanted to give you folks the platform to tell folks at home what they can kind of expect, or to essentially invite them out to the performance and let them know what's going on and what they might not want to miss out on.
I think because this is a hybrid show, something that I wonder about is, when we were working on the online show, it was never to replace being live in person. So I guess nobody's like said this, but I feel there's like a bit of resistance to trying the online show, and in the sense that there is a bit of a hierarchy of like, oh, the in-person show is going to be better somehow. But you know, I'm really proud of what we made online. It's like a really fully fleshed out, you know, really for that kind of home experience, and we really spent a lot of time testing with, you know, blind and sighted audiences. We did a lot of work on making people feel connected and good and held, even if we weren't seeing each other in the room together. So I just want to plug that part of it. But the hybrid part of this show is also that, you know, again, I also wanted to connect the people in the room and the people online. So what is common is that I'm speaking live to the room and to the folks online simultaneously. And that the online interface is being projected into the room as part of the environment of the room, again, to connect those two things together. And you still hear, you know, what people get online is they get to create their own soundscape in the interactions. And in the room, Jermaine, my co-performer, has a device that is playing the same sounds. So in that way, we're still connected. So I guess that's what I want to share, is that the hybrid part of the show feels important and really, like, we really considered that. So I just want people to know that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a great option for any kind of accessibility as well. Maybe folks aren't in Kingston this weekend, but they've got a free evening still and they want to check it out. Maybe they're just like, I've been to a lot of live shows, you know, I've gone to a ton of Fringe. Let me try this one from home. Let me see what's going on. So I think there's a wonderful plethora of options that are there for people to check it out. And just in closing, where can we keep up with the project and with you folks individually, if you are comfortable with that?
Yeah, so I my personal website is nas.sr. So you can find, I post pretty obsessively on Mastodon there, so my process. So if any of the getting into the weeds is interesting, that's where to find that. And my cooperative, which, like I said, is through the vehicle through which I did the work on What Brings You In, and we do all kinds of other really wonderful, really beautiful creative tech work. We have some great stuff lined up for the rest of the year. That's emma.coop, so emma.coop, and you can follow us there.
You can follow my audio and broadcast company. It's MRAV Canada.com, MRAVCanada.com. That's about it. There's an Instagram, but I don't ever post on it, so you don't need to follow that.
I do have a website. It's leslieting.com, leslieting.com. And you can sign up for a newsletter there if you would like very infrequent, sporadic letters. And there is Instagram. I do post process on there. Leslieting is my handle.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for sharing all of that, folks, and for being here on the program. For the folks at home, What Brings You In is playing August 16th and 17th, both online and in person at the Baby Grand at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So that's this weekend. Tickets are now available at thekickandpush.com. And we're going to keep it rocking here on CFRC 101.9 FM with more on the Kingston Curator coming up next Thursday afternoons. For today's live music lineup, I'll be featuring shows from fantastic local and visiting acts fast approaching to Kingston. Keep it locked because you won't want to miss these details. On Thursday, August 15th, head to the Cove Inn for singer-songwriter Tony Silvestri as part of Original Thursdays. This is a 5 p.m. all-ages show and admission is by donation. Later this evening at Hotel Wolf Island, Open Season Thursdays with Chris Brown, Joey Wright, and Jason Mercer will declare open season on anything musical. Admission to this No Minor show is free, and the music starts at 7 p.m. On Friday, August 16th, Music Westport 2024 kicks off at the Cove Inn with Kobo Town at 8:30 p.m. Tickets are $90 plus HST and gratuity, which includes dinner, a donation to the Westport Arts Council, and the roots reggae and calypso stylings of this Toronto ensemble. This is an all-ages show with the doors opening at 7 p.m. Also on Friday, August 16th, Exigen, Don't Tell Sarah, Arachnia, and Filthy will perform at Overtime Sports Bar. This show is presented by Filthy Band and Don't Tell Sarah, and this lineup of hard rock and alt metal kicks off at 8:30 p.m. This is a No Minor show with tickets priced at $10 and the doors open at 8 p.m. On Saturday, August 17th, as part of Music Westport 2024, you can catch Emily Steele and The Deal, Dennis Bauman, Liberation Street Band, Frank Ryan, Sunfields, Sean Pynchon, The Gertrudes, Foster, and Shay and Sudak at the Cove Inn in Lockwood Park. This event runs from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. Admission is free, and you can visit westportartscouncil.com for more details. Also on Saturday, August 17th, Hotel Wolf Island will host jazz pop duo Clear from La Pêche, Quebec. This all-ages show starts at 6 p.m. and admission is free. Later that evening, The Mansion celebrates its 15th anniversary with Destroyer, Canada's Kiss tribute. Doors to this No Minor show open at 7 p.m., the music starts at 8 p.m., and tickets start at just over $22. On Sunday, August 18th, head over to Leopard Frog Farm for a lively, lyrical performance by Kingston folk act Night Sun. Doors open at 1:30 p.m., the show starts at 2 p.m., and it is free to attend for all ages. Finally, to close out the weekend, Kings of Queens will perform a patio show at The Mansion on Sunday, August 18th. This No Minor show opens its doors at 8 p.m., with the music starting at 9 p.m. Tickets are just under $16. For more on these awesome local shows, you can visit kingstonlive.ca.
next on the Kingston Curator, we have Kat and Victor, cast members of Collected Novellas, who brought their fringe performance, A Sketchy Kind of Show, to Confederation Place from August 2nd to 11th. In keeping in our theater vein for this episode, we chat more about the group's formation and the creation of the piece. Take a listen. We are here with Kat and Victor, the performers from A Sketchy Kind of Show by Collective Novellas, which was playing in Kingston Fringe these past couple weeks here in the city, doing a little bit of a retrospective for you folks on their run. Welcome in both of you to the program.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
Of course. And I was wondering to kick us off, because you are just two of the cast members, but it's still great to have more than one person here to talk a little bit about the project. Would each of you mind introducing yourself a little bit more? And if you're comfortable, telling us a bit about your background.
Okay. Hi, my name is Victor Borges. I'm based in Montreal. I'm originally from Brazil. My comedy background comes from improv. I've been doing improv for 6-7 years-ish, and that inspired me to start writing sketch, and that's doing improv. It's how I met Kat, and we got together with other folks from both Montreal and Toronto and started to write sketches. So we've been doing Sketchfest since 2022, and together this is our first Fringe. I did one Fringe here in Montreal as stage manager, not as a performer. So it's good to have that hand of, I don't know, knowing how the backstage works as well, plus the being on stage too.
And for me, hi, my name is Catherine Rattuzzi. I go by Kat. I'm actually a Queen's alumnus as well. My background is in music and drama. I ended up teaching for the last dozen or so years. And pandemic provided an opportunity to have a foray into improv online, which I really thought would be terrible because it's a medium that definitely you need to have in person. But I was actually surprised how much we were able to connect and what actually we're able to do online. And meeting the incredible group of people from improv. And there are basically five of us that end up honing into a sketch team, and Victor and I do a lot of the writing. And ideas come from all over, a lot of just the nuances of what happens in life. And so we ended up, like Victor mentioned, performing in the Montreal Sketch Fest for the last few years, and wanted to grow our show, and thought the Kingston Fringe would be an excellent opportunity to do so, as it is, it's such an interesting city in that it has a small but solid arts community, and lots of opportunity for, you know, various types of arts to present themselves in Kingston. So,
yeah, wonderful. Thank you both so much. And I was wondering, could you also tell us a little bit more about the other folks in your cast, or maybe anyone else involved with the project that you'd like to highlight?
Well, we've got such a diverse background. Career-wise, we've got engineer, we've got an engineer, we've got a real estate agent, we've got a health and occupational worker, and that is kind of a fodder for the material that we've been able to hone. So one of our troupe members is doing a lot of artist performance, clown burlesque. Written solo sketches as well, performing Montreal. I have another one that in Hamilton, who actually, Taryn Crankshaw, who actually was an award winner for one of her screenplays in Hamilton's, and Jesse Justy Provost is another Montrealer who has had a variety of life experience and is also contributing as a writer. Victor, do you want to continue a bit further? Melissa Giacomini, which I forgot to mention, is the one that's doing a lot of performance work in Montreal as well, and in Toronto.
And also Vernon, right? He was there with us. He performed with us at the Fringe. He's always like keen to perform. I think it's funny. He's originally from Sri Lanka. But honestly, when I need a very Canadian performer, I think of Vernon, and I think he embodies that Canadian spirit like no one else. We had a few people added to the team for this Fringe particularly. We had Jarena, we had Alex and Tim. All three, Kat, reached out to them, and they've been they were amazing during the performance, very committed. And yeah, they brought a different flavor to our sketches as well.
Okay, wonderful. And then I was wondering a little bit more about the piece, specifically now you've mentioned that you've been able to take sketches to Sketchfest and similar venues since forming on Zoom during the pandemic. But in particular, this Fringe piece that you were able to showcase in Kingston, how did you work creatively to put that together? Were you still working remotely with each other? Was it in person? What was that process like for your group?
It's a whole new world. It was a really interesting process because Victor and I were doing a lot of the background work, back-end work. We actually had several live sketches and also several recorded sketches as well. So that was an interesting process because we ended up filming remotely, uploading the material to Victor, who would do the editing and the audio and piecing it together. We even reached out to like friends locally just for small bits and parts and characters to put it together. So definitely was a mix of online and in person with our performers, Drina Lee and Alex McClary in Kingston. I had come down a few times to Kingston from Toronto to do in-person rehearsals with them. The one cool thing about online is that you can have people from everywhere, but the one difficult thing with online is that it's really hard to get everybody everywhere at the same time. So having online rehearsals supplemented with in-person rehearsals was really kind of the MO that we used throughout the whole rehearsal to performance process.
For sure. And now I'm curious, if you've now been through that whole process, do either of you have any tips and tricks for folks who might be trying to facilitate creative projects through an online medium? Is there anything you've learned?
I think communication is key, I guess. Definitely like keep everybody in the loop. I thought it was rewarding because it gives you space to work on your stuff. That's a very pro part of it, because you can, if you have to work on your script, or you have to relearn, like the fact that it's distant, I don't know, for me it felt that I could work on that, I had time to work on that. That was a good part of it. And the bad part, not a bad part necessarily, but a difficult part would be you won't have the full vision of it. So mm-hmm. that's hard. We realize we have a sketch that the comedy of it is awkwardness. Every Zoom call, not that this one it is, but it's awkward.
Yes. So, no.
So it's like, oh, this is not working. And we've done this sketch before, and I was like, I promise you, this is funny. Just not here. But as soon as this goes, and everybody would react positively to this sketch, because watching people being awkward to each other, there is humor there for some reason. So unfortunately, our cast could not see that until we did it live, for example. So trust that it will go differently when you actually go live, and yeah, trust your gut in that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it does give some freedom and flexibility online, which is great. But I think one of the things that we did realize once you're in person is just a whole different ballgame. And there's so much shorthand that you can have in person that online doesn't necessarily provide. It definitely provides flexibility. Like you can have rehearsals any time of the day, and you get people can work on their own and come back. But that connection when you're actually on the stage or rehearsing is just it's such a different beast. So that was a challenge, because the rehearsals online help, but it's never the same as in person. So mm-hmm. that's a learning piece too.
Yeah, thank you. And Victor, you mentioned how you don't quite get to see the whole project then come together until you're in the space. And obviously, your group traveled to Kingston to do this Fringe show. I was wondering, how much opportunity did you get to actually situate yourself in the venue and get used to it before you were up and running and doing performances for local audiences?
I think what would best summarize our show is we're fixing the plane while it's flying. So we took off and we're still building the engine. So it was not a lot, answering your question. It's not a lot. Kat had the opportunity to do some rehearsals with them beforehand, but myself, like we would do a sketch and that would be, oh, this is not working, we need to do some changes. Our tech, his name is Will, great guy, great tech, who was very helpful. I think two or three times it came, hey man, we have a few changes. He was very receptive to them, but it's not nice to change so much during the days. So yeah, throughout the, Not the whole Fringe, but throughout a few days, we had to do a few changes, and then by the end, like yes, we had our best version of it, but it took us a few tries and errors to get there.
Yeah, the interesting piece to that is that we actually had a few performers come in, so we had to onboard. So not all of the, we had our core performers, but not everybody was there for all the shows. So onboarding and taking on different roles definitely was active learning. And the nature of improv is that you have to adapt and pivot. And then that piece from people maybe who are traditionally trained in acting, being like, oh, like, what? Why are we doing these changes versus in an improv or sketch nature that's a bit more common to the nature of the performance? So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad that that was able to still come together for you folks. Do you have any plans for this project now moving forward, like additional fringes, festivals? Do you have any idea, or are you moving on to something else, something a little bit different?
I think the goal for us, Victor and I think we're, for me, speak for you, Victor, if I'm correct on this, it both, I think, innervated us to continue forward. We did a lot of things that we've never done before in terms of our sketch performances and how we perform them and live versus video, and just a lot of idea generation. And then, okay, we've got this show, it's a solid show, we can absolutely perform this again. What if we want to change this? What if we want to add that? What if we want to submit to other Fringe festivals or sketch festivals? So I think really it really created impetus and inspiration, I think, for further work. Victor, would you agree with that?
And this is the first time we actually, even though it's a variety sketch show, it was all cohesive in a way. We tried to write it as everything would connect. We have a narrator, Kat was the narrator in a way for this show. So try to make like a, maybe in the future something more thematic, following a thread of thought. So yeah, well, that's the beauty of it. You learn something new and you want to apply it, and then maybe next time we do it, we learn something else, and we keep expanding, right? And the best way to do it is literally doing it, so.
Yeah, wonderful. Then we can get to the question at hand, essentially, which is, how did your Fringe run, even with the changes and any kind of speed bumps and all of the fixes and that sort of thing, how did it end up going for you? Was it rewarding? How did you see audiences react to the piece?
It was we had a variation of audience, right, Kat? Like, honestly, I was only there for half of it. Kat had the whole scope. But for the 4 days I was there, four very different audiences. This is different times, different days too, which is something you get to be prepared for. Some audience won't be as responsive, right? We had a day like the audience was not very responsive, but I would look at them, they seem to be enjoying themselves. It's not like they were cranky or anything. Whereas another days we have not so many audience members, but loud still, so that's always good. And so it was very different at least for me, for those 4 days. I don't know about you, Kat, like you saw it more than me.
Yeah, like overall, I think we had a really positive audience response. That said, audiences, and I've talked to a variety of people and performers in Kingston as well. It's just when an audience is quiet or they don't feel they have permission to laugh, or if somebody's not kind of initiating that, it can be, you can have a very quiet audience. Even though they're enjoying it, you're not getting the feedback. And with live improv or sketch, you really thrive on that feedback from the audience. It's kind of a key piece. So that said, I think we were happy with our audiences. Some were just incredible, and others were like, are they in? So again, you can't always you have to trust that the audience is there and they're there to support you and you're enjoying it. And also, this is the second year of the Fringe, so it's still kind of in its fresh stages. And I think across the board, from all 18 shows, the feedback was, these are incredible shows, these are great shows, we wish we had a bigger audience. So I think part and parcel, hopefully, as the Kingston Fringe grows and gets a loyal following, that we'll be able to have everyone, consistently fill those seats. And because the shows this year, I didn't see quite all of them, but I saw the majority of them, and they were all really excellent. So really impressed with that piece as well, the caliber of quality.
Wonderful. Well, then, starting to close a little bit here, where can folks keep up with your group as Collective Novellas as we move forward here, and with the two of you, if you feel at all comfortable?
So we have a YouTube channel, which we are still developing, but it's up and running. Collected Novellas Comedy, correct, Victor?
Yes.
And with the same name, Collected Novellas Comedy, we also have an Instagram, which we've been more active on, and we'll be posting. And personally, my Instagram handle is chrysalis_crat, chrysalis_crat. And Victor's, yours is?
Mine is Victor in between, so and between. No, not that I'm in between anything. It's because my last names are Nevis Borges, so I thought it was funny. Because I think I'm funny. So all I do right. These things.
Yeah.
And, well, if you're ever in Montreal, come to Montreal Improv. I'll probably be doing a show there.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much to the two of you folks. That was Kat and Victor from Collected Novellas with a retrospective on their Fringe piece, A Sketchy Kind of Show. And we're going to keep it rocking here on CFRC 101.9 FM on the Kingston Curator Thursday afternoons. This week on the Kingston Curator, but you can check out this and all past episodes on our CFRC podcast feed. We'll be back all summer, Thursdays at 2 p.m. That was the Kingston Curator, and this is Lauren Tucker signing off on 101.9 FM CFRC. Have a fantastic weekend.